On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are going to be talking about Hamilton's home prices, about ballots not counted in the last federal election, about Whoopi Goldberg and whether she should be canceled, oh, and about the Winter Olympics and some sports that were once upon a time winter sports, Winter Olympic sports that then disappeared, but should we bring them back? Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Brightest conversation in Hamilton radio is what we like to call it on a Friday evening as we go through many of the topics of the week. And this evening, thrilled to have back one of our favorites, guy who we bring in here from Cable 14's The Hamilton Network. Michael Eugene Fortune is with us this evening. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me back on Friday, February the 4th. It's World Cancer Day today. So hopefully lots of people are remembering that and doing what they need to do to help the cause.
It is also National Shower with a Friend Day. So,
well, you and I
don't know
are
how
friends,
you tie. Yeah, well, I don't know how you tie those two days together. And we're not that friendly.
I'll even wear a mask.
Yeah, that makes it all better. that just solves all the concerns that I had. Okay. I don't even want to know where you'll wear the mask, but that would probably be more helpful by knowing. Anyway, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you doing this.
I love being here. I think we're off to a good start.
Well, so, you know, I wasn't going to get to this because I think that we have talked, well, we, on the radio, on TV, online, in papers, people in conversations, everyone has talked this trucker thing almost to the point of exhaustion. But, you know, I was just listening to the news and before we came on here and listening to the mayor of Toronto, because there's apparently going to be a trucker that we're going to move down towards Queen's Park. And he's saying, well, roads could be closed and they better not do anything. And it's going to be really, you know, difficult to get around. And, you know, we're hearing that there's going to be like a slow rolling protest here in Hamilton. Look, I don't agree with what has ended up happening in Ottawa, where you've sort of come and never left. I think the point was made. I think they'd be better to move along. But what, for a mayor, I don't understand the comment that, you know what, it's a real problem that they're going to potentially be blocking some streets. Do mayors of cities not, and councils and city halls not grant licenses for parades that cause people to have to get indisposed and take different routes all the time? Do we not have parades and road closures for all kinds of things all the time? What's the difference?
Yeah, we do. But, you know, you look at Santa Claus parades or St. Paddy's Day parades, you know, those are specific routes. Planning detail has been put in by it. Businesses, counselors, police, fire, they have all been informed. They know what the plan is. These truckers are just coming in, Scott. They're just doing what they want to do all willy-nilly. And aren't obeying any of the rules and laws and permits that are supposed to happen. So,
but that's what a protest is. That's what a protest is by definition. And we allow protests all the time. Now, again, I don't agree with sticking around forever in Ottawa, but we allow protests. We had road closures in front of City Hall while people painted Defund the Police with paint on the road twice. We've had, you know, we allow this. This is something, not that. Although we seem to be okay, more okay with that than with truckers blocking the road for a while here. I just don't get it. If you're going to stick around and be a pain for weeks, yes, I do have a problem with that. If you're going to have a day of protest, that's what we allow in this country.
Yeah, you know, a few hours a day by all means. But what this has turned into is an occupation. I think Premier Ford referred to it as that. This is beyond craziness now. And I do think what Mayor Tory, so it sounded like a bit of a wishy-washy, typical, you know, communications, let's just put something out there type thing. But I do firmly believe that there are lots of conversations going on behind the scenes, and they are just trying to do everything they can. And this is just a little bit of a stall tactic to maybe scare these people off. But I don't think it's going to happen. I was watching the 6 o'clock news here, and the poor reporter from Hamilton was just getting bombarded with horns and fake news being thrown at him. It's a real shame that it's turned to this, and I don't know what can be done. I truly don't. And you know, for those poor people in Ottawa and now Toronto, what might happen? What a shame! What a shame!
Well, and again, I have sympathy for the people in Ottawa. But if you know, I don't think it's fair to prejudge if we're going to have a protest in Toronto or Hamilton that is going to take a part of the day and then it moves along, that to me is whether you agree or disagree with them, totally fair. That's, to me, that's totally fair, because we, you and I and others, tolerate protests on opinions that we don't agree with all the time, but that's okay. It's, you know, so I'm just not sure about the sort of the comments that, well, you're going to be really indisposed and it's really going to put you out here. Okay, well, if this drags on, fine. But otherwise, we deal with it all the time.
Well, and I think maybe that's what he's trying to do, is just, you know, let's keep this to a one-day thing and let it not drag on, so on and so forth. And again, you're dealing with a whole other element with these big, massive rigs, as opposed to, you know, a few thousand people. You know, you can bring out horses and the mounted patrol and kind of keep things a little more, I think, in control. But when you have these massive trucks, and then you have all this belligerence going on, and you know, you have buildings being put in place and propane in Ottawa, like, it's just, it's getting to be beyond that point where you can just have conversations with these people, unfortunately.
We got to take a break here, but we're all the same politicians who are now speaking out very quickly about stuff all over the place. We're all these same politicians at all different levels. I don't remember all of them having a lot to say when Caledonia was locked down.
No, they left that to the OPP and all that to deal with.
And how did that go? It went on for months and we hear nothing from anyone. Look, I'm simply saying we'll see what happens after this weekend. If it's just a come and go, then, you know, whatever. I found it odd that, you know, that we grant road closures all the time, and then one road closure, we're suddenly saying, well, this is going to be the biggest problem you're going to face. Let's see what happens before we prejudge this stuff.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Joined this evening by Mike Fortune from Cable 14's The Hamilton Network. And Mike, we learned this week from the Realtors Association of Hamilton and Burlington, the average price for residential properties in this area has now eclipsed $1 million. $976,423 is the average in Hamilton. $1,369,337 is the average home price in Burlington. You've got kids. I've got kids. They're not buying homes yet, but like, I have no idea how they're ever going to. I just look at this and I think, what do you do about this? We keep hearing experts say, well, we've got to fix the housing problem. What do you do to fix the housing problem?
Again, I think it comes down to municipalities and governments kind of getting involved, but what can they truly do? You know, I joke with my wife that, you know, retirement ain't going to happen. So, well, you know, because we're going to be there helping them. So hopefully you got a nice package. You got a really good relationship with CHML on the spec there, Scotty. You'll just be working forever.
Well, I'm actually on that, you know, those DNA sites looking for some tie between me and Bill Gates. Just one DNA strand that I can get in his will. No, look, the only answer, I think, because we, you know, I've heard politicians talk about, well, we need to add taxes to this to disincentivize stuff. It's like anything you add is going to be passed on to the buyer. It's only going to raise prices. The only way I think you can do this really is by vastly increasing the home stock, the amount of homes that are available. I don't see any other way.
But then you have to find all the space for it. And where are you going to do that? You know, there's people that don't want urban sprawl. You can't keep building up. You know, people don't want to be living in condos and apartments either. Does it come down to raising minimum wage? But then you get involved in inflation. Like, it's a horrific circle. Now, with that said, you know, many moons ago when my grandparents first bought their house for like $10,000, everyone was like, oh my gosh, that's just crazy. That's unheard of. And then, you know, next generation, my parents can go buy a house. I don't know what the dollar amount was. Let's say it was, you know, $100,000. Okay. So it's all relative with time as well. You somehow find a way and make do. Let's hope kids get into a good education, make some good money, are financially
savvy.
Yeah,
but they won't all. They won't all. 15 years ago, by the way, 15 years ago, the average house price in Hamilton was $217,800.
Yeah.
So in 15 years, it's gone up fivefold. I can tell you that people's incomes have not gone up that much. And so, yeah, so here's the challenge we have right now, I think. And you know, we can try and make this as simplistic as we want. And I think, unfortunately, some people do try to make this simplistic. you're right. If we're going to say no urban boundaries, there is only one other option. And that is either, well, it's not either. It's density, whether that means up or whether that means putting homes in people's backyards and allowing for zoning changes or whatever else. But that's the only other option we have. And I don't know that, as you say, I don't know that everybody wants to live in a condo. I don't know that everybody wants to live in a tiny house in someone's backyard. I see no, unless, and look, we can have the argument all day about urban sprawl, whether it's good or bad. That's not what this is about, although it kind of is. But if you're not going to expand the boundary, I don't know how this problem does go away.
No, and I don't have a crystal ball to look into either to know what this fix is going to be. And it's not going to be overnight, Scotty. We know that. It has to be a well thought out, and hopefully the politicians can all get on the same page. Get the real estate association and ORI involved as well and say, look, what can we do? We've also heard, I'm not trying to throw real estate agents under the bus because I know so many of them, they're wonderful people, but are they also probably part of this problem, raising up the prices, competing against each other behind the scenes? Are there proper things being put in place to stop allowing these housing prices just to go up with massive competitive bidding, so on and so forth? Maybe that's something we need to look at as well.
We've heard people say that we should be banning blind bidding, which is fine. But I got to tell you, let's say you've got a house up for sale for $750,000 and it's going to go on the market. You may not have blind bidding, but someone who wants that house now knows, well, listen, if I come in with a first bid, even if it's not open, if I come in with a bid of $1 million, I got a pretty good chance. And someone else may come in with 1.2 thinking, well, I mean, it's going to be there. Even if it's not there, it's still going to be there in some ways. And so I don't know. I just don't know how. And you know, as I say, to say, well, you can't do this without expanding the urban boundary. Maybe there is a way. Maybe someone. But this is one thing I would love to hear from those who have been in favor of stopping the urban boundary expansion. And I'm very willing to listen, and I think everyone is too. What is the answer? And to simply say more density downtown and higher condos and more buildings and stuff, not everybody wants that style of living. Not everybody wants to be downtown. So what is the answer?
Not only that, but of course the strain on the infrastructure, the streets, the parking, the pedestrian traffic, the car traffic, so on and so forth. You know, just to go back to the bidding thing, again, I know it won't be done, but, you know, sometimes you throw stuff up against the wall. If it sticks, great. If it doesn't, maybe you just get rid of competitive bidding regardless. You know, there's no competitive bidding in when you go to a supermarket or when you go to a guest store, to Limeridge Mall. The price is the price. You're paying it. And I don't know if there's a way to get around that. I don't know what it was like buying houses years ago if this competitive thing has always been around. Maybe that's an option.
What are you saying then? You set a price and then whoever's the first one in with that price gets it?
That's the price. Yep. You know, it's no different if you go to the mall. You go to the mall and there's a pair of jeans there. It's the last pair. Boom, you bought it. Here's my, $100 for a pair of jeans. Done.
So why not then if I'm a seller, why not put the price at some extravagant mark then? I just raise my price. And then if someone wants to, so I was going to put it at $700,000 thinking maybe it would go up to 800, but I'm just going to set it now at $1 million if that's the price. And if you want it, fine. And someone will pay it.
So you're still going to raise the market. You're still going to, and like I said, maybe that's a hole in what I'm thinking. Yeah, I'm just throwing something out there, but how many people are out there that can truly afford $1 million? And if people are putting the houses at $1 million and they're not being able to sell the house, they're going to be like, I guess we got to lower our price. You know, maybe it could reverse itself and go back that way because there's not too many people out there that can afford $1 million home.
Now, the positive note is that we're hearing there are those who are now saying that this is a giant bubble and could the whole market could lose 20% very quickly at some point when people realize it's a giant bubble. We'll see.
Scott, we've heard about this bubble for years now that's going to burst. And when has it ever burst? It's never burst. It always keeps going up.
Yeah, you know what? It's even if it does burst, let's say it does drop by 20%. I don't see that puts it on a downward trajectory long term. It will start immediately going back up again. That seems how it always has been. I mean, housing in history has always ended up being on an upward trajectory, even if there are dips in the rise. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there are answers. I'm sure brighter people have answers. But here's the thing. I've yet to hear anything that sounds like it's really going to work. We hear lots of people saying, fix it. But how do you fix it?
And again, I know this probably won't go over too well with those people that are listening, but you know, who are developers, somehow get the developers involved. Talk to them, because they're the ones that have purchased and hoarded all this land for many years for, you know, pennies per acreage, and now they're just worth a vast fortune. But maybe something has to be done there. Maybe you have to start penalizing developers or something like that, so this doesn't happen. And again, don't know what the solution is, but...
Yeah, and the other the counter answer to that would be, and you'll hear the developers say this, look, we're not hoarding the land. Getting the permits and everything is a giant pain in the butt, and they move so slowly we can't develop it. So maybe city halls have to start saying, you know what, we're gonna hurry this process along a little bit so we can get these things built. I don't know. Anyway, it's more than $1 million on average. And I mean, people who are listening who have lived in this city for a long time, guaranteed never thought they would have heard the day that a house price in this city averaged $1 million. That is just bonkers. Anyway,
it certainly is. Nice, you know, for the people who are fortunate to own a house, you know, it's nice to know that you're sitting on a bit of a nest egg at least. But again, that doesn't solve any issues for those that can't afford it, haven't been able to, and into the future. But if you are fortunate enough to, you know, be thankful that you have that roof over your head and that you are in the market.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
So this story that I want to talk to you about kind of, I think, flew under the radar this week a lot. And yet I find it fascinating. And unlike some people, I'm not looking at this as some sort of malicious or secretive conspiratorial thing. The story is that Elections Canada came out with its report about the 2021 federal election. And according to Elections Canada, about 205,000 mail-in ballots that were sent to people, requested by people, mailed to them, either came in too late to be counted or were never returned. 205,000 Canadians, that's their ballot, never got counted. And again, I know some people from a more conspiratorial bent than I am have said, oh, look, the government suppressed voters. I don't believe that. I don't believe we're a banana republic. I don't believe that stuff is happening. You can if you want. But I do look at this and I think there is something wrong with our system, with our voting system, if 200,000 plus Canadians were unable to get their ballot counted somehow. There's something wrong.
There's definitely something wrong. And, you know, whether the Canada Post, maybe it's mail carriers in general, like you truly don't know where this would have went wrong. And if you are a voter who did mail in voting, that's has to be very disturbing to you. And I get the purpose behind it, you know, for convenience and for elderly and so on and so forth. But nothing beats just going into the voting station and putting your X down with a pencil and seeing it actually go in itself. This should be some cause for concern. Who knows how much more of an investigation is going to go into it. But think about how, you know, 205,000, who knows how far across Canada they were spread, if it was one particular area.
We don't know. Apparently, it was across the country. Most of the hardest hit areas by this, as I read somewhere, were in BC and Ontario. But we don't really know a full breakdown.
And how would you feel, you know, if you were a candidate in one of those two provinces and, you know, you just lost out? Perhaps your vote wasn't counted because of it gone missing or whatever the case might be. So it's definitely something that needs to be looked further into in regards to ensuring that this doesn't happen again. Otherwise, it just continues to add uncertainty to our voting system and how legit everything truly is.
The number that I find especially, so 114,583 people, according to Elections Canada, 114,583 requested mail-in ballots and they were not returned or they were canceled. Why they were not returned, whether people were just disenfranchised with the election, disinterested, whatever, we don't know that. That's a curious part. The more troubling one in a sense to me is 90,274 people had ballots returned late and weren't counted. And this seems to me, Mike, that this should be an easy thing to fix, shouldn't it? That as long as your ballot is postmarked by a certain date, even if it arrives months later, should it not be counted?
You would think, but then are you waiting that long to announce who the winner is?
Well, what if you have to undo it? I mean, look, I don't know. There's no suggestion that any races would have been overturned, although I don't know that they would have. I don't know if they counted any of these or checked who were being voted for. But look, if you are too slow, if you've got a ballot and you can't get yourself to mail it, well, shame on you. Right. But if it's and we don't know, but if this thing is arriving too late to be counted and you could have some that were lost or whatever else, if it comes in a year late because Canada Post lost something, surely it should still be counted if it was postmarked on time.
Yeah, one would think. But again, a year later it's a year too late. So how is that going to help? And what if that vote is counted or votes are counted and it changes the outcome all of a sudden? What do you do then? So again, there's a crack in the system somewhere, and you have to put in better procedures and standards to ensure that ballots get sent in sooner. Maybe you have to send them out to the requested ones a little bit earlier. There are lots of different levels that this has to be looked at to ensure that these don't happen again. And, you know, you can understand a small percentage, but that number that you threw out to us, Scott, is just unacceptable. In this country nowadays, with so much technology that we have, that this is actually happening.
And funny you mentioned technology, because I know that some people will say, well, this is why we should have online voting. That may be. But at the same time, Mike, the online voting, I guarantee you, because this is what always happens, there would be glitches with that too. If we had nothing but online voting, there would have been something, it would have blocked something, or it would have been, you know, seen as spam. I mean, who knows what might have happened? Somebody would have hacked the system. I'm not talking about the Russians. I just mean, you know, sometimes, and I know people sometimes can be locked in long-term homes or seniors' homes, and there's reasons you could be overseas. But, you know, sometimes the simple way of actually going and voting just seems like it's still the best way. And that we had COVID here and there were challenges. That's not about this. I'm talking long term. The old way sometimes sounds like it's just still a really good way.
Yeah, that's how I said things off the start of this topic, and that's what we always do. And you know, it comes down to, you know, you want people to be more engaged. You want people to get out and vote. Request more volunteers. Pay a few more bucks per hour and get kids or university or college students involved, and start to send out more of these voting centers throughout various regions. You know, you want people engaged, allow them to be engaged, pay them a few bucks more, and allow them to be part of the process. And maybe it comes down to something as simple as that. You know, we live in a huge country with 33, 34 million people. There is no excuse that we can't go out and man more areas, voting centers, I should say, to ensure that things do get done. Help the seniors out. Help the newcomers to our great country out a little bit with various language centers as well, so you can speak their language and help them out with their voting process as well.
Mm. And to your earlier point, I will say that, you know, you're right that it would be very cumbersome if a year later you discover a batch of ballots that somehow got lost. And what do you do if it were to change the outcome? My answer would be you change the outcome, because as long as those were postmarked on time, those should be counted. And yes, it would be awkward. Yes, it would be terribly cumbersome that someone was sworn in and now you say, I'm sorry, we found another 3,000 votes. And I don't know if it would be, but whatever. And you actually lost. To me, that's the way you do it, even if it is ugly, even if it is awkward.
Hey, Trump would love you by saying that right now.
But the difference is, this isn't a Trump, because we don't know. Like in those cases, we don't know about votes that were lost. Here, we're hearing from Elections Canada that 90,000 votes were returned late and not counted.
I know. I was saying that in jest.
I
agree with you 1,000%. It's a very awkward situation. And again, if I was a candidate, you know, I'd want to know where those votes were. I would want them all counted to see what the kind of the true number is, and then you deal with, you deal with the headaches afterwards. But really, are there going to
right
be governments,
right.
Elections Canada, are they really going to get themselves involved in that kind of a web of uncertainty?
Right is right, though. And you right know, the other
right,
thing
yeah.
is that, you know, and if you're a voter, and this says ballots returned late and not counted, if you're a voter and you didn't get your vote, you requested a mail-in ballot and you still didn't get it mailed out in time, well then, you know, shame on you for being so laissez-faire about the whole thing. Well, then you don't deserve to have your vote counted. This I'm
yeah,
talking about the people who got it in time and did everything right and then were disenfranchised because it didn't count.
Yeah, by all means. So, yeah, you've put your request out there, you know, get off the couch and do it. I'm assuming they make it very simple with the return address, stamp, the whole works. You just got to put your X down and put in your mail slot.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Now, I don't know if you are a regular viewer of The View. I am not. But, you know, if you are, that's okay. We won't judge you. But this week on The View, Whoopi Goldberg, who everyone knows who Whoopi Goldberg is, they got into a discussion about the Holocaust. And Whoopi Goldberg, I don't know what she was thinking. I don't know where she was coming from on this one, but decided that, said that the Holocaust was not about race. It was not about race, she said. It was about just man's inhumanity to man. Leaving aside, of course, the fact that Hitler was trying to create the map, but the whole thing was, and get peace. It was specifically about getting rid of a group of people because of who they were. But, you know, anyway, ABC decided to suspend her. She's been off for 2 weeks now. And, you know, the people are all upset. I want to bring Mike Fortune back into this one, Mike. So Whoopi Goldberg says something stupid. I mean, really stupid, ignorant and ill-informed and all the rest. And I don't know if she was doing it just to try and get attention or if she really believed it, but whatever. She said something really stupid. And now a lot of people are saying she should be fired. She should never be allowed back on the air. And I don't know what you think, but see, this to me is, whether she meant it or not afterwards, she went on the air and apologized. I don't know if it was a meaningful apology, but this to me, while I disagree with every single word of what she said, Mike, I hate cancel culture more almost than someone saying something stupid. And if she's willing to apologize and willing to educate herself, why must that person be fired?
Scott, you took every word out of my mind that I wanted to say, because I am also very tired of this canceled culture scenario that our society has brought ourselves into here. No one on this planet is perfect. We have all said things that we didn't mean, are ashamed of, wish we could take back, need to learn from, teachable moments, whatever the case might be. A sincere apology, not something that's written by your PR firm or something, but a sincere apology, as you said, educate yourself, get involved with the charity or the cause or the history of whatever the case might be that you've made a mistake in saying or observing, will take you far, far, will help your personality and your reputation far more than just, you know, completely cancel them and they are done and we never get to hear from them again. It is extremely unfair to constantly just say one strike and you are done. I disagree with it, and we see it far too many times now, Scotty.
And you know, I want to be very clear. This does not in any way say that I excuse or whatever what Whoopi Goldberg said. It was stupid. It was beyond stupid. It was wrong. It was ill-informed. It was uneducated. It was offensive. It was all the things that we talk about when we say that someone has to be gotten rid of. And again, though, I just look at this and I think it's time that I think, as long as you're willing to apologize and do something to show some contrition, then I don't know that we have to obliterate everybody when they do anything. I mean, if it's an ongoing thing, if you're going to be a, if you're going to do it constantly, or you're, if she had come back on later and said, no, I stand by what I said, this, I'm totally right. Different thing, but
different conversations had around the ABC boardroom at that time. Listen, you're live on air 5 nights a week. I've been on air for close to 20 years myself. Sometimes you get caught up in the moment. Sometimes you get slightly distracted. Sometimes you don't hear something properly, or like it just happens. As professional as you are, sometimes a wrong word or wrong phrase or wrong thought, it does happen. It comes out for whatever reason. It's tough being in her role. It's tough being in your role to ensure that you are always on. And there are days when you are going to be off and make a mistake. Again, own up to it, educate yourself, apologize profusely, make sure that it doesn't happen again, and hopefully we can all move on. There are too many people that have been ousted for small mistakes, saying the wrong thing, using a wrong word here or there, and it's very unfortunate.
Here's what I'm truly hoping comes out of this, and I have very little belief that it will, but, you know, keep your fingers crossed and hope. Whoopi Goldberg has been consistently a progressive on most issues. The people who would be on the left of the political scale would consider her one of them. And the fact that many of them who are seemingly very quick sometimes to demand that others be canceled are not saying so much about her. I'm hoping that maybe, and it goes both ways, I'm just talking in this particular case, maybe the next time someone who they disagree with a little bit says something that they disagree with or that is offensive or that's wrong, maybe the same keeping the powder dry applies when that person says that thing on that show or anyone else, as opposed to immediately having the knee-jerk reaction that says that person must be immediately gotten rid of.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I think there also has to be, you know, sometimes you also have to look at the topic as well as to what is being discussed. The Holocaust is one of the most horrific things in this entire world, bar none. Watch any documentary, any History Channel on it. It is just disgustingly mind-boggling what these poor people went through. You know, Whoopi has a big name. She's got millions of dollars. Put your money where your mouth is now. You have a following. Create a charity. Create a foundation. Do something. And yes, to what you just said as well, Scott, regarding those people that keep things all kind of level as you start to move forward. But I think there's so much pressure through social media on executives to make this, it also comes down to ratings, and it comes down to advertising dollars as well.
Yeah, but I mean, look, the same week that we're hearing this happen and, you know, Whoopi Goldberg does this, we're hearing people scream that Joe Rogan has to be canceled. Neil Young is coming out going, you can't have me and Joe Rogan on Spotify, Joni Mitchell as well. And it's like, okay, so again, I look at this and I think to myself, why are we, and maybe this is a rhetorical question, maybe it's obvious, why are we very willing or demanding that someone cut us a break when we make a mistake and give us a second chance, but if someone else does it, we have no mercy and no tolerance for them because we disagree with their position? Somehow there's got to be a little introspection, doesn't there?
I would agree. But when it comes to us, we feel we didn't make the mistake and we should be given that second
but
chance.
But we do. We have. We will.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I should even go this way. You know, does race play into it as well? I don't know.
I don't know. Well, but, I mean, when she spoke, and we got to run, but when she spoke on Stephen Colbert the next night, she addressed the fact that as a black woman, she looks at race as something that is obvious and visual that people could immediately see. She is black and you couldn't automatically tell that someone was Jewish. I don't know that that helped. That is certainly based on what she said, something that was in her mind. Again, I just look at this and I think I don't know that we get anywhere by just saying you say something that I disagree with, even if it's offensive. And we immediately have to cast you away from society and put you on an island somewhere. I just, you know, if it's ongoing, if there's no forgiveness, no apology, if there's an unwillingness to establish that you said something wrong, okay. But even if it's even if it's a made up apology, and I don't know if it was or not, you know, like where's our ability just to say, you know what, you screwed up, let's be better.
Because it's not there anymore. And I like your idea of cast them away. Cast them away, put them on an island somewhere. Boy, that sure would clear up the housing crisis here in Hamilton and beyond, at least, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Any mistake you make, you will be cast to Greenland. Houses available in Hamilton and elsewhere.
There we go.
Lots
housing
of them.
Crisis solved.
Solved. Yeah. Any mistake, you're gone. We will fill your house.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
So I am assuming that you are aware, like most people are, that this morning, very, very early our time, was the opening ceremonies of the Beijing Winter Olympics, a complicated Olympics, and we'll get into the complication in just a moment. Are you an avid Winter Olympic viewer? Are you a casual Winter Olympic viewer? Are you a non-Winter Olympic viewer?
I honestly didn't realize the opening Olympics ceremony was today. I'm going to be honest with you. I have lost
so
a lot of interest.
So put you into the casual category.
Yeah, I've lost a lot of interest over the years, to be honest with you, with the Olympics and the politics behind it. And, you know, just with it being overseas and there being such a time difference, it's a little more difficult to kind of be involved and engaged, I think, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not alone. 47% of Canadians in a poll that was done by a group called Research Co. What's it called? Yeah, Research Co. I didn't know that was the name. Anyway, 47% of Canadians say that they will make a conscious effort to refrain from watching because of what China's been up to lately. So, you know, we'll see if that holds. It will hold, Mike, if Canada doesn't do very well. If Canada starts kicking butt all over the place, I imagine people will start tuning in.
And I think that is what, and it's really unfortunate for not just Canadian athletes, but for the athletes around the world, that they put their heart and soul into their training every day and the sacrifices that they and their families make. And I don't want to come across that I don't appreciate all the hard work and effort. The Olympics to me has just become too political, too much of a financial gain for the rich and the rich people and all the companies out there. And again, if Canada does something well in a few sports, yeah, by all means, I'll probably start to tune in, but it's going to be tape delayed, and I'll probably get the update on Twitter or social media when I wake up in the morning, and then it kind of defeats the whole excitement of watching it live and in person.
So CBC is covering this, NBC in the States is covering this. How should they, like, on the one hand, you say it's sports, people want a break from all the politics. They don't want to be bombarded with the heft of the political stuff all the time. On the other hand, you know, it's kind of hard. You're dropping the ball if you don't cover that as well. If you're a broadcaster, how do you cover it properly? Where's the balance?
If I was an executive producer, I don't know. I'd be sitting around with my team trying to figure that answer out, because athletes also realize that this is an opportunity to show my political colors and stripes and be on this huge stage to get my voice and point across. So I don't know if there is a good way or a fair way to go about doing this to keep sports with sports. Mind you, at the same time, we have to appreciate the fact that athletes are human beings, that they do a sport because they love it and it's for our entertainment, but they do have thoughts and they're very intelligent people and they should be allowed to be heard. For me, it just gets to be a little too much. You know, the China thing, I think, is a little bigger based on the government politics that's kind of going on. People need to be heard, and I don't know if CBC can come across and do something that would keep everyone happy. Well, we know they can. They won't be able to keep anyone happy with whatever decision they make. We already know that.
No,
that's
they can't.
Right there.
They can't. And the athletes, you know, I'm waiting with some level of bated breath here to see who the first athlete is who's going to test the Chinese regime, because it's been made very clear. Don't you get out of line. You will follow the Olympic ideals. This isn't about politics. You will not speak out against the IOC or against the Chinese regime. I'm waiting to see who the first athlete is to say something about the Uyghurs or something about Hong Kong or something about Taiwan or something about whatever, and to see what happens and to see if that's going to be accepted or if that's going to cause an international incident.
And they don't even have to say something. Maybe it's a sign they hold, or maybe it's a gesture they make. Like, you just truly don't know. I was reading an article, I think it was through a news agency in the States, saying that as an athlete, purchase and bring a burner phone. Don't bring your own personal devices, because that could pose a lot of problems as well. Like, it's really unfortunate that China is going, and Beijing is going through all these measures to silence people. It just goes to show you how it must be to live there year round, 24/7. It's who would think you can't bring your own devices? It's mind boggling.
It is. Yes, we will see how this goes. Some athlete, I am convinced, some athlete is going to bravely do something. I don't know who, I don't know when, I don't know from where, and I don't know what the response will be. And I think,
what can they truly do? They can't silence them. They can't hold them back.
Oh, they could. Look, their own star tennis player, Peng Shui, has been at the center of a controversy because she kind of disappeared. And
she also holds a passport to that country. If you hold a passport to Australia or Canada or the States, like, you imagine, it won't be allowed to happen. They've said their part. Let them go home. Like, I don't think they can do anything.
I would like to believe that they can't. Now, let's put it that way. I'd like to believe they can't, but I don't know. If I'm an athlete over there, do I want to be the guinea pig to test out that theory that it can't be done? And that's where it comes tricky.
I guess if you truly believe in something, if you have strong faith and belief in something, you will take that risk and you will just say, this is how I feel, and see what happens. See how the cards are played after that.
So, Mike, here, let's lighten things up just a tiny bit, because it is a hefty thing, honestly, and it is going to be interesting to see how the broadcast networks cover this, because they are going to be watched very closely as well. If they just serve as cheerleaders, they are going to be heavily criticized. On the flip side, if they do nothing but talk about politics, they will be criticized by those who want to watch sports and are going to say, look, Bob Smith is working his butt off as a skater and you're doing nothing but talking about China's politics. That's not fair to him. So I don't know. It probably is an impossible balance. But here, I looked this up today. This is true. These things are true. And I want you to give me a grade on zero being no interest in seeing it ever again, and 10 being I want that back in the Winter Olympics. These are 10 former Olympic sports that once upon a time were in the Winter Olympics that are no longer there.
So zero, right? Never again, 10 has to come back. Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Fire dog away. Sled racing. Dog sled racing was a demonstration sport in 1932 and 1952. Would you want dog sled racing as part of the Winter Olympics?
I'm going to say no, because I can only imagine how PETA and animal lovers are so opposed to that.
Yeah, if you think there's protest now just about the Chinese regime, bring the dogs. You're right. That's here. I've said this before, and I mean, I laugh about it, but working at the paper, if we have a story, and this is almost sad, in fact, it is sad. If you have a story about something horrible that has happened to a baby, people get upset. But the number of letters, if you have something terrible happening to a dog, are 10 times more.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've heard those comments before. It truly is amazing.
All right. Military patrol. And before you answer, let me say, you're saying to yourself, what the heck is military patrol? It sounds like a video game. That would be awesome. Military patrol was an official medal sport in 1924. It was a demonstration sport in 28, 36, and 48. Not entirely sure how it becomes a demonstration sport after it's already been a medal sport. But anyway, military patrol is a combination of cross-country skiing, ski mountaineering, and rifle shooting. You have to do a 25-kilometer cross-country ski, a 1,200-meter mountain climb, and then shooting.
Oh, I would pay to see that. That's no different than what they're doing now. I forget the name of it, in the Summer Olympics, with the swimming, biking, and running. So
triathlon,
I think there's skill to that. I'd put that at an 8 or 9 to bring something like that back, for sure.
Ice stock sport. This was a demonstration sport in 1936 and 1964. It's kind of a variation on curling. The stone is smaller, and there's a stick that comes, a vertical stick out of the top of the stone instead of a handle. And it's kind of like curling with smaller stones.
No interest in seeing that. The curling, the way it is, which I get into every 4 years when the Olympics are on, so that is something I would watch eventually. But no, don't bring that one back. We already got curling. It's perfect as it is with some great teams.
See, I think if you had this but allowed the other teams to swing their brooms at the sweepers, like if it was full contact curling and you made it ice stock sport and, you know, you wore full equipment – and you had to make your way down the ice, battling through the other team, blocking your sweeping efforts, that would be a sport I would watch.
So basically you have them dressed like a gladiator sweeping
yes.
a rock.
Yes. Yes. See, okay. Now we're getting somewhere. Now okay, we're getting a gladiator.
You know, that can get some viewership.
Instead of throwing a rock down the ice, you have one of those old medieval mace things, the ball with the spikes on a chain. Maybe we're getting a little too far here. I don't know. All right. 2002, there was snowshoeing was a demonstration sport, and it is exactly as you would expect. It was a race wearing snowshoes.
Yeah, you know what? Again, similar to various types of, I would put that at a 7. I would say, why not? It falls in the same thing as running. And anything like that. It's an endurance sport. You have to be an athlete to do that, I would say, yes.
Ben was just making a point. He goes, you know, what this would be great is when you have the bunch start, everyone's tripping over everyone else's snowshoes. It's just chaos at the start line until you can get free because everyone's falling down and tripping. You got to be at the front of the pack or else you're just completely snookered. And even if you are, just step on the back of their snowshoe and stop them. I mean, it could be great. Again, full contact.
Could be a whole new market for Nike or Adidas, you know, these snowshoes and put all these extra, you know, new elements into them to make you go faster as well.
Could you imagine modernizing that? Now you've got like the, you know, carbon fiber snowshoe with spring loaded bearings and okay. Bandy was a demonstration sport in 1952. It's kind of like hockey, only you use a ball instead of a puck.
Yeah,
45 minute halves, 11 players on a big ice surface.
Not too. Is the net the size of a soccer net as well, or is it a regular size net?
you know what? It's funny. I'm looking that up because I was thinking of the same thing. Because the goalie doesn't get to use a stick, mm-hmm. and so 22 goals. So Germany played. Oh well, no wonder Germany played Somalia at one point. And they put up 22 goals. So, yeah. Well, you know what? Okay. I have
no interest in that. I'm putting that as a 2, Scott.
Winter pentathlon. All right. This is where someone at the IOC headquarters in Lausanne, Switzerland, one time when they were getting the winter games really going. This is the day that Bob brought the package of meth to the IOC headquarters and said, let's take this and then come up with a sport. All right. Winter pentathlon. 1948 was a demonstration sport. Cross-country skiing, shooting, downhill skiing, fencing, and horseback riding.
Oh, my gosh. It's like you've thrown everything into the kitchen sink in there, eh? Wow.
Everything's in a blender. I love that you've got all these things that are sort of wintry and then fencing thrown in on horseback riding.
Yeah, no, I ran out of other stuff. Seeing something like that's a complete zero in my book. That's called overthinking things.
Why not have like, remember the old wide world of sports in Quebec, the old barrel jumping? We could have barrel jumping in there instead and darts and I don't know what else. What else could you do? Like they ran out of winter sports apparently. So they decided they were going to throw in the horseback riding and fencing. Surely we could find some other winter stuff.
Like moose riding or something.
Moose riding. Snowman building.
Hey, snow fort building.
Snow fort building. Yeah, snowball fight. Snowball fight. How's that not an Olympic sport?
You could do a version of dodgeball with that.
like in the movie Elf, you get Will Ferrell with that rocket arm that he had in the scene in Elf, and suddenly he's a gold medalist.
That's right, yes.
Now, this one's still around, not in the Olympics, though. Synchronized skating. We've all seen synchronized skating. It's, the lines of people doing all their stuff. It's some of the best in the world are from this area, Nexice. It's a very demanding sport. It's not an Olympic sport right now. Would you be wanting to see synchronized skating back?
I would watch that. That takes a lot of skill and talent, and it falls right in line with figure skating, whether it be pairs or individuals. That would be fascinating to watch. I'm giving that a strong 10.
I'm surprised that's not there, and I'll tell you why. Because figure skating, look, the Olympics, one thing they all want, NBC wants, CBC wants, the IOC wants, they want ratings. And figure skating is one of their best rating things in the Winter Olympics. Why would you not add more figure skating events? I don't get it.
I agree. You watch the Summer Olympics and the synchronized swimming and all that, how fascinating that is. Like I said, strong 10. I like it.
All right. Ski ballet, demonstrated in 1988 and 92. It's also known as acro ski. And it's kind of what it sounds like. It's on a, not moguls or anything, just on a smooth slope. And it is a choreographed routine that you would do going down the hill. It's kind of like figure skating on skis on a hill.
Yeah, I actually remember watching that in those two Olympics. There was some interest there. I'd probably sit that at a 5. Again, I appreciate the talent and the athletic ability to be able to do something I would never be able to do. So I can see how there would be people that would want to watch that. Me, I'd put it at about a 5.
All right, these next two, I'm going to say in advance, I'm high on these next two.
Okay.
And I don't mean high like with the meth experiment from the IOC and the pentathlon.
That could be an Olympic sport. How much cannabis can you smoke? There you go.
Well, we've already got one of those. Ross Rebliati won the gold medal in that one back in wherever that happened.
That is true. Okay, fire away.
1992, there was a demonstration sport in speed skiing. Now, I'm looking going, wait a second, isn't all skiing speed skiing? Isn't that the whole point of the downhill and of the everything else? Yes, except this one, there were no turns. It was get into your tuck and do the Steve Podborski tuck and just go straight down in a straight line as fast as you can, and whoever can hit the highest speed wins.
Totally. Anything that involves that type of danger, speed on ice, basically it's ice on thin pieces of carburite or whatever the skis are made of, by all means, hands down. Yes, I'm with you.
Mike, what everybody, I don't know if your school ever had ski days once upon a time when you were in high school or elementary school. Our school had a ski day once a year. And this is pretty much what most of us did anyway. No helmets, cheap goggles, tuck in. And you know what? If you happen to be dumb enough to be, crossing, cutting, making your turns on the hill and you get in the way of somebody, I mean, you're just going to be exploded on. But this is what we did. You tuck and you go, and you go as fast as you can.
You tuck, you go. There was no parental forms that had to be signed. Go at your own risk and broken bones and teeth. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
The good old days, Scott.
I think the word peril might have been in there in the document as well. And Ben idea. Ben back at the station just had the great idea that, have you seen those videos where at the end they have the ski thing where they put a big body of water at the end and you have to skim across the top of it? That would be the great ending for this. And if you wipe out in the water, you fail because you don't get there. I'm with it. I love that one. That's a 12 out of 10 for me. And this one that I don't even know how to pronounce it. So it's either ski-joring or more likely it is with some sort of Swedish inflection, ski-joring, which is probably closer. It was demonstrated in 1928. It is skiing behind a horse. So the horse gallops along and you're holding on with a rope like a water skier. And I guess you've got to do jumps or tricks or slalom or whatever else, but you just get on behind the horse.
Animal lovers will freak out over that. And I would not want to be behind a horse. Heaven forbid if he has to have a moment to himself as you're in midair or something and he just stops and lets one, So no, I have no interest in watching a horse pull a human on skis. No, thank you.
I'm just picturing the horse all of a sudden gets spooked and stops and you're flying along behind it and just do a massive face plant right into the butt cheek of the horse.
Exactly.
Look, great television, fantastic television.
It would, as the kids would say nowadays, Scott, it would go viral on social media.
It would. And you just got, you want to make sure you get your run done before the horses do what horses sometimes do, like in a parade or something, and leave some, you know, obstacles on the ground to slow the skis. The ski wax doesn't work real well on horse dung, I don't imagine.
And for people who know Seinfeld, do not make sure you wouldn't feed your horse any beefaroni before.
Yeah, that is the handsome cab ride behind the horse would be unfortunate if that was the case. Yeah, no beefaroni for Bucky the horse that's pulling you in the ski dory.
In the gold medal run.
Yeah, it could turn out to be a different color medal. Right. Oh, there you go. All right, those are the events that sadly have been lost to time, but who knows? Maybe one of them will come back. I, as we've been talking, Mike, I must say I have changed my tune. And I am now very, very, I was initially very skeptical. I am now very much in favor of bringing back a return of the winter pentathlon because I want to see the cross-country skiing, shooting, downhill skiing, fencing, and horseback riding routine. Okay, that to me is...
We'll sit on different ends of that spectrum. I don't have any interest, but hey, if it's all you, go for it. Go for it.
You know, we have an opportunity right now. Because no one else is doing it, to turn Hamilton into the world center of winter pentathlon excellence.
Yeah, start a school here. Wait on city council for approvals and build buildings and all that stuff, and we just know it will never happen. It'll just get punted down, right?
Well, we probably wouldn't be allowed to use the swords for the fencing. We have to use Nerf or something for safety purposes. But
that's,
you know,
right. Yeah, you know, and people are already upset about the mounted unit with HPS, like bringing more horses. Like, I don't know, the council wouldn't want to approve anything like that.
Mike Fortune from Cable 14. You can see him on the Hamilton Network on that station regularly. Michael, always appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for doing it today.
Thanks, my friend. All the best to you, Monica, and the family. And Ben, great job. Thumbs up. Great being on again, pal. See you soon.
Have a great weekend. Let's take a break here on the Scott Radley Show. By the way, as I let you go to the break, you listening, what of any of those, what would you like to see back in the Olympics? Any of those sports appeal to you, or do you have something else that you would like? Snowball fighting, I'm telling you, that's another one. Teams of snowball fighters could be really good. That could be a really awesome sport too. But, you know, there's others. Let me know. Radley@900CHML.com. Would love to hear from you.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.